content of this program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. Hello, this is Nicole Hunter from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from Essence Magazine, the March and April 2020 edition. So continuing on with this edition, we're going to go to Body and Soul. So from my heart to yours, after a rough breakup she didn't see coming, power star and single mom, Natori Naughton shares her truth and lessons learned in an open letter to black women. Dear sis, being a celebrity woman in the entertainment business doesn't exempt me from heartbreak or the ups and downs of love. My life sometimes imitates my art. Playing Tasha on the hit TV series Power that just recently ended gives me a chance to bring raw emotions to the screen, just as pouring my heart into my music brings me joy. I'm currently writing my own songs and working on an extremely vulnerable album that I can't wait for you all to hear. You'll discover that at my core, I'm still the girl next door, the girl from East Orange, New Jersey, who had a dream. But I can use my voice to empower other women, so I'm sharing my story with you. As a woman and a young mother, I've learned that we should never compromise our happiness for anyone, especially in a relationship. Women are used to sacrificing for others, and sometimes that selfishness becomes dysfunctional. You know in your heart when you're not happy and when you're feeling undervalued. As soon as you realize that you are settling or conceding your worth, you have to make a move. Check in with yourself and say, wait a minute, is this what I want? Is this who I really am? My ex and I broke up after 3 months after my daughter, Zuri, was born. I was devastated. I didn't tell anyone about our breakup for 2 years because I was embarrassed and ashamed. I wrote a song about it. It's called Stay Too Long because I'm not afraid to share what happened anymore. Breaking up with someone you love is real, and you might still have to put on your lipstick and your heels, walk into work, and be able to deliver. That's hard. I went back to work shortly after having my baby girl, and I was trying to find my footing every day. Since then, I've learned to be unafraid and not compromise my happiness for anyone, particularly a man. As women, sometimes we say, well, I don't want to be with him because he's not this or he's not that. But sometimes it's not about what he is or isn't. It's about what you need, sis. That's another valuable lesson I've learned. I made a difficult choice to end a relationship because I had to put my own needs first. The truth is, I was afraid to become a mother, and I honestly did not feel ready. I was uncertain about my relationship and unsure if I was going to get married. I wanted to have this perfect life because I had seen it in the movies, and my parents have been married for 48 years. Then it hit me. The perfect life I envisioned may not be God's plan for me right now. And it's okay to be on my own journey as long as my daughter is healthy and happy. It took a while to get there or to get here. I went to counseling and had a spiritual advisor. Maintaining my sanity was challenging some days, but with my counselor's help and the support of my family, I made it. We all go through tough times, and it's okay to say, you know, I just need something different. No disrespect to your partner or your ex, but you might just need to recognize that you're going in a different direction. I had to put the picture-perfect fantasy aside so that I could focus on finding the right life, the right relationship, and the right kind of happiness for me. That's been a huge shift for me, but I'm staying true to what Zuri and I need. Right now, co-parenting is what's important for my ex and me. We may no longer be together, but we'd like to make sure that the respect is still there. Zuri needs to have a strong and healthy relationship with her father. It was important for us to continue in counseling to help us co-parent in the most positive way we can. You have to do whatever works for you and your family, and that's what I'm trying to do, what we're trying to do. Our ultimate goal is to make sure Zuri is safe and happy and has a strong relationship with both of her parents. As a black girl, she needs her dad in her life to show her affection and love. Her grandfather, too, teaches Zuri how she should be treated and adored. When she grows up and starts dating, she will remember what it feels like to be well-loved. It takes a village. If you are sharing parenting duties, I encourage you to find the common thread, which is your children, and put aside your issues, your unhappiness, your anger from the past. I'm not going to lie. There are good days and bad days. But one thing I know for sure is that I'm doing my best. God has really blessed me. Even when I didn't see it, He was blessing me. I now see that when I thought I was losing something, God was just opening up a door for something new and better to come into my life. When Zuri was just a few weeks old, I remember singing "This Little Light of Mine" to get me through some of the roughest days. As some of you know, I grew up singing in church, and something about that classic hymn always calmed my spirit. It reminded me that we all have a light inside us that's meant to shine, and thankfully, I passed that light on to my daughter. In the words of my girl, India Ari, I am light. I am also beautiful, special, quirky, ambitious, happy, and made to be great. Never again will I dim my light for anything or anyone. That is the lesson I want to pass on to my daughter, so I must lead by example. Being a single mother doesn't have to mean you're unhappy. I bought my first home a few years ago. I starred in Power since season one, and I'm dating again. I didn't get married, and I don't have a fairy tale love story yet, but I'm stronger than ever and having fun too. With everything I've been through in my life, like not working for a few years, being kicked out of a group, singing group 3LW, and experiencing heartbreak. In love, the biggest lesson I've learned is patience. That's what it took for me to get to this point. And I'll need it to keep growing as a woman, a mother, and a future wife. I've also learned that I will and will not accept. I won't just jump into a relationship because I may feel lonely or want companionship. Ladies, it's so important to seek your own happiness first. Then when the time is right, get into a relationship that nurtures you. Be patient, sis. It will come to you, and you deserve it. With all my love, Notori. On to Essence Escapes, Jamaica. Lifestyle director Metoya Z. Webb creates the perfect getaway on the island's treasured but less traveled south coast. I've traveled to Jamaica more times than I can count, and each time I go, it's hard to leave. When I do leave, I'm already making plans to return, which I've done consistently for the past 20 years. The island has the effect on me. My connection to Jamaica runs deep. It's where my people are from. My father was born in Hannahtown, a close-knit community on the west coast in Kingston, Jamaica's capital city. When he was 8, the family moved southeast to Vineyard Town, where he has fond memories of walking to Gunboat Beach every Sunday with his late father, whom we affectionately called Father, and all 7 sons in tow. Situated on the north coast in St. Anne, the largest parish on the island, is the small rural settlement of Alexandria. That's where my mother's family is from. Boasting impressive ocean views, Alexandria has become a popular site for luxury vacation rentals. But back then, it had vast areas of farmland nestled in plush countryside. My mother's grandpa Washi farmed the family land there until he was 98. In 2010, I road tripped around the island with a friend who was penning a Jamaica travel guide. I tagged along for moral support, and because he promised to introduce me to a Jamaica I'd never seen, a thriving island with hidden gems tucked away in all 14 parishes. We journeyed beyond the gates and walls of my upscale all-inclusive resort to uncover a more authentic Jamaican experience. We bypassed the untaped beauty on the island's best-kept secret. its less explored South Coast along the way. Since I always find a reason to return home, this time around I was determined to discover the South Coast. Venturing south is not as easy as getting to popular resorts like Montego Bay or Ocho Rios in Negril, but the drive from Sangster International or Norman Manley International Airports is worth it. You'll spot almond trees towering over their neighbors in the bush, herds of goats claiming their space on the road, and beaches and fishing villages. And when you finally arrive, red-skinned, red-haired, blue-eyed natives, and to be the descendants of Scottish sailors who were shipwrecked here in the 19th century, greet you with a smile. The stay was at Jake's Hotel.com. It's a boutique hotel on Treasure Beach with options for every traveler, from oceanfront bungalows and cottages to luxury villas that come with a gracious staff. It's the ideal home base. And the experience, YS Falls or YSFalls.com, is hidden in St. Elizabeth lush jungles. Rope swing into the cascading waters or chilling spring-fed pools and admire the century-old Gungongo trees. And as far as exploring, Lover's Leap got its name because legend has it that rather than be torn from each other by jealous plantation owner, two slaves fled to this cliff 1,700 feet above sea level and jumped. The storied spot promises next-level views. As far as for the indulgence, Jack Sprat serves up some of the best seafood on the South Coast. Order fish with steamed veggies and a side of Bammy. Little Ochi Seafood Restaurant and Bar is another must. Pick your fish and tell Chef Blackie just how you like it. And as far as the visit, Floyd's Pelican Beach Bar. It's perched on stilts in the ocean, has the island's purest vibes. Before you go, have one of them hand carved your name in wood. On to another article from the decor edition, or the decor section, I should say. It's titled "At Home with Forbes and Masters." This Atlanta-based interior design duo have earned their seat at the table. Tavia Forbes and Monet Masters had no interest in working together when they met in 2012. I was 25 and had just landed my first major commercial interior design jobs, recalls Masters. I was designing it to a T, but could not admit that I didn't know how to complete the project. All the work that I had done prior was residential, and I didn't know anything about commercial design. Forbes did. She had been helping small businesses around Atlanta with their aesthetics, and was brought on to finish the job. The first step was meditation. I was uncomfortable and offended, admits Masters. Throwing shade left and right, and Tavia was just so sweet. Following their awkward first meeting, Forbes stayed behind and offered Masters some valuable advice, which prompted Masters to phone her the next day. I thought she was calling to cuss me out, but her demeanor and voice was so positive, says Forbes. It takes a big person to do that after being let go. The two connected, then forged a bond. They began assisting each other on projects for a year before establishing Forbes and Masters, a full-service interior design company that customizes both residential and commercial spaces, in 2014. Where Forbes is weak, Masters is strong, and vice versa. Mutual respect and complementary partnership are what makes their hashtag Black Girl Magic so dynamic. The common denominator in all our projects is boldness and high texture, says Masters. A lot of designers subscribe to a certain style because that's where they are comfortable. But if you're dealing with different people, for every project, a different feel and look should be produced. And given their diverse clientele, it's fair to deduce that originality is their forte. Candy Burris, the owners of regional salons and restaurants, and a lengthy list of NFL players have tapped Forbes and Masters to curate their living and work spaces. Forbes and Masters headed to Nashville in August to install their design for a room in the House Beautiful's Whole Home Concept House, which opened back in October of 2019. It's a major accomplishment for two young black women navigating the highly competitive interior design industry. "We're designing a music room," reveals Forbes. "We're going to black it up and give it some soul," adds Masters. But in the meantime, they show us how to transform our own homes for the fall. Essence Eats, the NYC edition. So these gifted black chefs and restaurateurs are leaving their imprint on the food scene. Welcome to the new wave of grubbing in New York City. Number one, Brooklyn Chop House. Brooklyn is in the house. Former record executive Robert Don Pooh Cummings broke out the music biz and into the upscale dining scene. Brooklyn Chop House in Manhattan's financial district serves Asian and steakhouse fusion cuisine, attracting celebs like Mary J. Blige, popularity among Wall Streeters, millennials, and a diverse crowd means there will be more BCHs soon. And some of Essence picks are opt for the Summer Watermelon Cooler Cocktail, the Chicken Satay, and Crispy Steamed Pork Dumplings. Then get the Steamed Matok Black Bass. Number two, Dessert Hideaway. Smart chefs start out with pop-ups or food trucks. Executive chef Natalie Mitchell is doing both. In the courtyard of the Hipster Bar, the Springs in Brooklyn's Greenpoint neighborhood, she's established an innovative outpost. In her navy blue food truck kitchen, Mitchell works wonders, whipping up delectables for happy hour and dinner. Our picks begin with the fried pimento cheese, Baja shrimp tacos, or fried chicken drizzled with date syrup. Then order the flavorful house-made sausage sandwich. It looks like a New Orleans po' boy. Number three, Belle Harlem. This Central Harlem eatery is one of the most exquisite restaurants in New York City. Chef Daryl Burnett and his wife Melissa, who's the manager, have cooked up tasty flavors for an unforgettable 12-seat dining experience. "It's an extension of our home," says Daryl. "It's like a floating dinner party," adds Melissa. Some of Essence's favorite picks are, first up, the mac and cheese, spring rolls, or chicken and waffles. Then try the black sea bass over homemade pasta, the peanut butter, which is blueberry jam, truffle, honey, and bacon, is a must. And then finally, Negril BK. So that's a Caribbean food lover's flock to Park Slope, Brooklyn. For Negril BK's superb island cuisine and amiable vibe, the One Love mantra is fostered by owners and siblings Melissa Brown and Peter Best, and longtime chef and chief mixologist Andre Honorer. Sip on the Iron Man cocktail at the bar, or chow down in the vast main dining room with its banana tree mural. "Our guests have become family to us," Brown says. And some of Essence's favorite picks are the sample the Aki and saltfish spring roll, then indulge in the crispy snapper, steamed or stuffed with Creole shrimp. For dessert, go with the truly decadent banana bread pudding. She wants the cake, not the crumbs. Going from being homeless and sleeping on airport floors to flying first class, Backstage Capital founder Arlen Hamilton shares details of her new life as an entrepreneur. Between ages 21 and 35, Arlen Hamilton experienced devastating degrees of homelessness. While she never slept under a bridge or on the streets, she did sleep in the San Francisco airport. Today, the 39-year-old is the founder of Backstage Capital, a venture capital firm centered on startup creators who are women, are people of color and or identity or identify as LGBTQ. The San Francisco airport is where she now catches flights four times a month to places where she is met by an SUV and driven to a four-star hotel. While Hamilton went from rags to riches, she never takes her role or her current life for granted, and she has no problem challenging the old guard. I'm no longer going to settle for the status quo or what someone thinks I'm supposed to have, she says. Read on for more from Hamilton. What have you found to be the most challenging aspect of being a boss? Bad stuff happens when I try to step in too much. I like to make decisions that are really high impact, and sometimes I have to make really tough ones that don't make me very popular. So who makes up your support team? My mom. I take her a lot of places. She was with me when we slept in the car, and now she's with me at the Four Seasons. There's also my partner, Anna. I'm Texan and she's German. She's more logical than I am. I'm a dreamer. And then there is the team at Backstage Capital. We have a wonderful group. And at some point you were homeless. How did that affect you? Yes, but I did make a pact with myself that I would never sleep outdoors in the elements because I didn't think I could come back from that. I have a lot of resilience, a lot of fortitude, but I did not think I could recover from that mentality or that mentally. What will make you feel as if you've really made it as a founder? When I'm turning down capital rather than toward it, I know that will happen as clearly as I know that we would invest in 100 companies by the end of 2020. We reached that goal ahead of schedule in 2018. I knew that would happen as clearly as I knew that black women deserve so much more than crumbs when it comes to investments. And on to another article, Breaking the Cycle of Broke. From the GI Bill and baby bonds to student borrower bankruptcy relief act of 2019, one money expert considers what it will take to rehabilitate black wealth. According to the Institute for Policy Studies, the median wealth of black families is just 2% of the median wealth of white families. That's $3,600 for black families compared with $147,000 for white families. In other words, white families possess 41 times more wealth than black families. Unlike income, which is earned in the labor market, wealth is built primarily by the transfer of assets across generations, thus making it possible to possess a high income and a little health or wealth, or low income and significant inherited wealth, or any other combination along this wealth-income spectrum. The reality is that black households with median wealth near or below zero pass down generational poverty, while white households with substantial resources bequeath generational wealth. Conversations around reversing the racial wealth gap often begin and end with a narrative that is equally as pernicious as the wealth inequalities it tries to explain away. The wealthiest in our country earned their riches far and square and by the sweat of their brow. On the other hand, our poorest and most vulnerable are deadbeats and deserve their wretched lot due to weak morals and bad decision making. But this is a lie. A quick look at our country's economic history will reveal that white wealth is more a function of U.S. government-backed supports aimed at ensuring white success rather than the dishonest narrative of individual grit, smarts, exceptionalism, and hard work. After World War II, for example, veterans were offered federal and through the GI Bill to purchase homes, farms, and businesses, get jobs, and pursue an education. Though this was a race-neutral policy on paper, it's been documented that black veterans received far less assistance and access to their benefits than their white counterparts. In fact, upon their return home, thousands of black veterans were denied admission to colleges, turned down for loans for housing and business, and excluded from job training programs throughout the Jim Crow South, as well as the North. 75 years later, The GI Bill has served to establish, strengthen, and expand the white American middle class while simultaneously destabilizing the black American one. If public policy has been leveraged to create wealth for select Americans in the past, it can be leveraged again this time to produce riches for all Americans. One 2020 Democratic presidential or ex-presidential candidate was Senator Cory Booker. He had proposed the passing of a baby bond bill, with originally the brainchild of economists Derek Hamilton and William Darity. Baby bonds would be federally managed accounts set up at birth for children and endowed by federal government with assets that will grow over time. Another notable approach to possibly eliminating the racial wealth gap includes Senator Elizabeth Warren and others' proposal to introduce the Student Borrower Bankruptcy Relief Act of 2019. The bill would eliminate the section of the U.S. Bankruptcy Code that prevents federal and private student loans from being dischargeable. Naming this institutionalized cause of the racial wealth discrepancy doesn't negate the role personal choice around money play in contributing to the eradication. It just manages our collective expectations about how effective these measures truly are in generating wealth for the average black family. And it looks like that we actually have run out of time today for today's episode of Essence Magazine. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Nicole Hunter, and you have been listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, www.ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. So long, until next time.
The purpose of the North Carolina Reading Service is to connect people who are blind and print impaired with each other, their families, and the community by delivering news, information, and entertainment using the latest audio technology. If you have questions or comments, please give us a call at 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. You can also visit our website at ncreadingservice.org. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.